Make May your month for big cash winnings at your favorite Washington Gold Casino. Just stop by the Crazy Moose Casino in Mound Lake Terrace and see how their guests are winning thousands in cash prizes. So why not make today your day to strike it rich? Washington Gold Casinos. So close, it feels like home.
Get in the freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Beard has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Hey, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk here on 710 ESPN Seattle. 710sports.com as well. You hear that screaming. That whoop of excitement, and that's been me for the last couple of days. Just that much excitement left over from what the Seahawks did in the draft and, you know, really completing an offseason where they took the power back. And we discussed that, Brock, a few weeks ago. I remember playing the Rage Against the Machine song and how John and Pete really seemed to be reconsolidating their power. Gone are the anti-establishment, heard this too many times, reading in a meeting, kumbaya meetings. See you later.
Yep.
Don't need you on this team. Gone is the coordinator who made the worst call in the history of sports and also seemed to be as obsessed with throwing the ball as any. He should have been playing for a run-and-shoot offense with Warren Moon in Houston back in the day, and that's Daryl Bevel. Gone is Tom Cable, who made mistake after mistake in drafting linemen and converting linemen and a line that just never coalesced during his time here, or at least over the last 4 or 5 years.
Yep.
And so all of that gets completed with this incredible draft class that really combines a tremendous vision for running the football, as Pete has said over and over again, physical violence out there on the football field, with an incredible awareness of character and leadership. And a group that will buy into what Pete's trying to do. I just think the whole off season taken as a whole makes so much sense.
Yeah. You cannot believe how excited we are.
That's me.
Yeah, and you put together a pretty good poll question. I guess let me just, we're going to continue to talk about this draft class today. We're also going to shift some gears and talk some baseball today, which will be fantastic. But I was asked a number of different times by different people, what makes this one different? Why are you so all in on this class? Is it just because there is so much anew? Right? Is it just because of everything that you just referenced from this offseason? Did you want to go in and just kind of believe in it and love it? Is it the familiarity of a number of names of guys that you know and was kind of pressed on a number of these things? And I guess I just come down to it was really their conviction. Like this guy is the one they wanted here. This is the best punter in their mind. This is the best running back in their mind. This is the best blocking tight end in their mind. Like, And there wasn't really debate or question because the guys were on the board at those positions. So I guess it's just a conviction, Mike. And when I looked at your poll, you know, to me, that's what stood out more than anything is, and it had to start with the coaching staff changes. It had to start with that, and I think everything has fallen from
there.
Funny,
you and I see it a little bit differently, and I'm not disagreeing with anything you just said.
No, you can disagree.
No, I don't. I mean, I think they were convicted on all those things. That's just not the thing that ties it together for me. It's the way it makes everything else they've done this offseason make sense. It gives a holistic approach, right? Everything really feels to be integrated with itself, where all of the free agent moves made sense with the assistant coaching changes, with who they let go, with who they were able to draft. All of them made sense together. It felt like they came into, like, remember what after the season ended and the Seahawks kind of were quiet forever?
Like
they locked themselves up in the dark tower,
like,
and John and
weeks.
Pete didn't say anything,
right?
And nobody talked to the media, and nothing leaked out. And then all of a sudden, it was like bam, 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 bam. Richard Sherman, Michael Bennett, Jimmy Grant, bam. Like everything just started happening all at once after they had apparently holed themselves up and had a tremendous number of conversations where it sure looks like they looked inward to determine what it is they truly wanted to do this offseason. And what I love so much about it is that when things went awry, and in their mind they did, remember John Schneider saying that 9-7 felt like 2-14, that when things went awry for them, they went back to the things that were right at the core of their philosophy. And when Pete Carroll was asked about improving the running game, is that what this draft class was about? You know his answer.
It's right on the mark. That's exactly what we hope to do. You know, and we wanted to see if we could factor it in. We were thinking, you know, that there was a good chance we might have a shot at running back because it was a great draft for those guys. And then Will was exactly attuned to that. And so, you know, and you know, even in the off season and the things that we've done, there's a number of things that are leading to that. We give ourselves a chance to get better. There's no question.
They decided to look inward, Brock.
Yeah, I mean,
look for the right kind of character guys. Look for the right kind of identity guys. And that started when Pete made what I think was a very difficult decision for him to move on from Daryl Bevel and Tom Cable.
Yeah.
And there's not, I don't think it's a surprise. I guess I should say that. I am surprised that 47% of you in this poll said that was the biggest positive impact the Seahawks will have this year.
Yeah.
Getting rid of Tom Cable, Chris Richard, and Daryl Bevel, 47% of you voted for that as the biggest positive offseason impact compared to the free agents, the draft class, or losing some of the veterans who left.
Correct. Yeah, poor free agents.
Yeah, 1%.
I mean, we've never had a poll, Mike, where there's a 1%.
Not impressive.
I wonder if it's going to go all the way down. Well, it can't be zero.
Shamar Stephen and the accountant, Tom Johnson, just for whatever reason, didn't move the needle.
And Barkevious Mingo.
That's not a group that's going to move the needle. But I thought the draft class actually would have been number one. That would have been my bet.
Really? The fans would have said that?
Yeah, I thought people would have been super excited about the draft class and put that number one. And it's probably number two to me, but it's hard for me to vote only because I think all these things work together.
Yes.
All of them together are all about the same thing.
They are. And I guess ultimately, in listening to you talk, I don't know if Pete and John would put it in that same way, in that same vein, a holistic and integrated look. I think that they honestly were just humbled. I think they were such a failure offensively that when you really step back, Mike, and you know, I think that this class does represent it, and Pete just said it, you know, point blank. It's about the run game because the run game was unbelievably broken. I mean, your quarterback was the leading rusher on this team by a long ways and was the only one outside of you know, your little scat back to have a rushing touchdown. So it was so broken that it forced them, you know, I think, to be accountable and to go and get that right. And, you know, and that level of accountability, I guess, first and foremost, started with those coaches. And that's why it was an easy vote for me. I mean, I would say 100 out of 100, the most positive impact of this season moving forward was that coaching staff.
Why do you think it took them so long then to make that move? Because I think
because they were going to the playoffs, because they were winning the division, because they had a ton of success year after year after year after year after year after year. And when you look in this league at continuity and how important that is, Mike, and how fleeting it is at the same time, I think they appreciated that aspect.
I don't agree with you. I think it was loyalty. I think it was just a sense of loyalty. I think Pete's a loyal guy, and I give him a lot of credit for that. I think it's a really important quality in people and in a boss, et cetera. But I think he was just overly loyal. And I think, honestly, I think Pete couldn't put down Daryl Bevel because of the Super Bowl. I think, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, Pete did not want Daryl Bevel to be the one to take all of the blame and felt like if he let him go after the Super Bowl, it would have been putting all of the blame onto him, and I think he felt like that would have been unfair, that it was a group decision, they all reached it, they were all in agreement, and to canned Bevel would have been to say, yeah, no, it was all on that guy. And he refused to do that.
Yeah.
And okay, fine, you don't want to do that year one, whatever, okay. But year two, year three, it just kept adding up and adding up and adding up. And finally, I think he was far enough removed from it.
Yep.
Not making the playoffs gave him an excuse to do it. But I honestly think it was a sense of loyalty.
Well, the loyalty to the winning. I mean, the loyalty that they brought me a ring, a loyalty that they brought us to the 1 yard line again. I mean, a loyalty that was built on success.
I feel like it was more on, I don't want this guy to look like he's taking all the blame. And I think I disagree with that. I understand why. I get the idea of not wanting to make an excuse. But I wonder if Daryl Bevel could have acted. Have you heard about how people take charcoal pills? So you like go out drinking for the night. At the end of the night, you take a charcoal pill.
A charcoal pill?
Yeah, the charcoal acts almost like a black hole. Like it sucks up all of the impurities and it puts it into one ball and then you flush it out of your system. So people use it when they're sick or if they're hungover or some other things. You call charcoal pills.
Oh, you've used that, Kyle? You're not in approving?
Yeah, I'm familiar with the charcoal pill.
Couldn't Daryl Bevel have been that charcoal pill? Couldn't you have, like, allowed him to take all of the heat, even if it was untrue?
Right.
Everybody was blaming him anyway. Just put all of that anger onto him and then flush it out. Yep. And then maybe you don't have a furious Richard Sherman and a furious Michael Bennett. All these guys are so angry about how it was going.
Cure.
Yes.
Put all the toxins on him and get it out.
Yes, that's kind of what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay. Howdy, I know you agree with me on this.
That's what I've been asking for years.
Right up your alley.
Yeah, I get it. It's very difficult to do that when you're winning in this league.
You just like Daryl Bevel.
No,
you just like him. And you refuse to say that.
I like winning.
And
you
like him.
I like setting.
You could have won more games.
I like setting
somebody else.
Franchise records. I like having continuity. I like having things that stand in the face of so much of the turnover of the NFL, where that just grass is always greener. And yeah. Let me just go a different direction and let me have change just for the sake of having change. And that's not always the healthiest dynamic.
What a Salk thing to do. Put out a poll, then make people choose one option, then say the correct answer is all of them as a whole. No, I chose, I'm with Brock. I chose the coaching changes. That was number one for me. But the reason I think the poll is hard is because they do all sort of work together.
They do.
710, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know. The voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Well, the Mariners are back home for a home stand after a successful road trip. They will send Felix Hernandez to the mound tonight for the first game of a three-game set against the A's. The Angels will roll in after that. It's a tough spot for them. This is sort of where they've had their foibles in the past.
Yep.
Go out on the road, get everybody to kind of buy in, come home, play against a team like the A's that you should be able to beat around, and then all of a sudden you lose two out of three and then three out of four to the Angels, and you're like, ah, what happened? Yeah, as I watch them here, again, the starting pitching is going to be what's in the crosshairs. We know this lineup can hit. Can this starting pitching hold up? And, you know, if they have an injury or so in here, what does the depth look like? And we'll talk about this a little bit at 7:30. You know, after watching Erasmo Ramirez a couple of times, I think that you got to have eyes on that. Hisashi Iwakuma had a setback. He's not going to be able to pitch anytime soon. If it turns out that Erasmo ends up not being 100% right now, you turn to Ariel Miranda. Are there other options? Mm-hmm. Do you end up going with Frenchie, your guy?
Wade LeBron.
A lot of choices here for the Mariners.
Well, as fractured as April was, with some rainouts and crazy starts, and really so hard to get in any rhythm from a scheduling standpoint, not on the road an awful lot, May is a very different story. May is a time with a lot of home cooking. This week-long homestand, they go away for a week, then they're home for another 10 days, and they got a bunch of Mondays. And there's a lot of structure in this month of May, and you're 100% spot on. I was thinking just that this is one of those series, one of these homestands that you've got to pay off this trip. Instead of just basking in the wonderfulness of a 7-3 road trip, now you got to have that same concentration and determination in every single game, in every single series. And that really starts with Felix tonight and a dangerous Oakland team whose lineup also, Mike, is bashing the ball and has got them above 500. And Felix got to be sharp tonight to set the tone for this homestand.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
NFL Network introducing their list of the top 100 players for 2018. Doug Baldwin was the first Seahawk to check in. He's at number 99, 10 spots below Jimmy Graham. So it shows you just how successful and accurate this list is. I'll take Doug Baldwin over Jimmy Graham every day of the week and three times on Sunday. More importantly for Baldwin, though, he was awarded the Martin Luther King Jr. Medal of Distinguished Service Award by the Seattle City Council. You know, it's interesting, while there's been a conversation about whether or not Pete Carroll was trying to move on from players that were politically active. Yeah. I've never agreed with that thought, and Doug Baldwin is probably the biggest reason why. Doug Baldwin's been as politically active as anybody on this team, and he's done it his own way. He's done it his own thoughtful way, and I don't think it has anything to do with outside interests or political activity. I think it has everything to do with buy into the system here in Seattle. Mm. Doug buys in while doing his stuff outside the building, and unfortunately, Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett no longer did.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And just how much of your individual kind of route in recognition and seeking it through that process versus the team concept. And Doug has been a marvelous story here from beginning to where he sits today. Not only is one of the best players in this league representative of this list of him being in the top 100, but also his voice, also his maturity. I mean, he was as volatile as anybody. He was as emotional as Michael Bennett, I think, early on. He still carries a lot of that burning fire, but yeah, we've watched him grown up before our eyes, and kudos to him for a very special war recognized yesterday.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, according to a report from the NFL Network yesterday, the Seahawks and Cowboys trade talks over Earl Thomas eventually came to this. Dallas refused to part with more than a third-round pick, and as the story goes, when they called with that third-round pick, John never answered the call. Yeah, thanks for calling. You're a little late on this one. We're not doing this for a third. Would I have done that? Yeah, I think I might have. I think at this point I might have actually traded Earl Thomas for a third-round pick. I would have been disappointed. But that's not what they did. Instead, they're going to play this out. I don't see Earl Thomas signing an extension anytime soon. Yeah. I see him maybe showing up for training camp. We'll see. If playing out this year and then either walking away in free agency or maybe being franchised for a year. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I would say coming out of the draft, and we didn't spend much time on this yesterday, that was the only disappointment, because I think there's just a gray area here. I think now it's going to be all about Earl. And what is Earl going to do? And is he going to show up to any of these workouts, Mike? Yesterday, was the start of phase two of the program. The first 2 weeks is all running and conditioning. Players on their own. Phase two now, they get on the field a little bit and have the coaches get involved. The rookie mini camp is this week. And are we going to see Earl at any point? Any of these voluntary workouts, or will it just simply be the three mandatory days and that is it? I don't think that's a healthy place to be for player and for program, but that seems to be exactly at the crossroads where these two sides are.
All right, three things you need to know every day right at 7:10. Talking some Mariners here in about 15 minutes. Good texter here says, weird. Fell asleep just now. I was dreaming about a tiny Daryl Bevel traveling through my gastrointestinal system like Dennis Quaid in Inner Space. Kyle, that one's probably a little before your time, but worth a watch if you're feeling frisky one afternoon. Yeah, maybe not. Let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
If you want to take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Brought to you by Divorce Lawyers from N.com.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to totally break everything down.
Plus. A wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John. Hello, John.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are we doing?
What's up, JC?
Good. How are you?
Oh, we are so good. So excited about this draft.
John, I'm excited about everything, excited about all that they've done. Maybe you can vote in our poll here. So which of these things do you think will have the biggest positive impact on the Seahawks' upcoming season? Their changes with their coaching staff, their free agent signings, the guys they let go, Sherman and Michael Bennett, Jimmy Graham, etc., or the draft class that they just drafted. Which do you think will have the biggest positive impact on the Seahawks season?
I'd probably say the coaching staff. I mean, the reason I stay away from the draft is I think this draft, there's going to be more guys that are going to be more playing next year and the year after than this year. You're not going to make immediate impact. Obviously, Rashard Penny will and Green will on the defensive line, but I think the coaching staff, because I think they're the ones that are going to try to revive some energy, try to at least put in some different plans on defense, be a little bit more aggressive, and on offense, certainly run the ball more.
I don't know, John. I think I disagree with that, and I appreciate your opinion. I think as far as draft classes go, that was a number of these classes over the years because the team was so loaded and the roster was so full and there was little competition. I mean, I think Disley's going to go in there right away and have a chance to be the number two tight end and be in a number of those packages. I think Dixon's going to be the punter. I think, as you referenced, those two defense guys are going to get their shot. I think Shaquem's impact in special teams will be felt immediately, and Penny's going to very much vie for the number one spot. I think there's going to be more ample opportunity for this class than the last three or four.
Yeah, I compare it to 2011. If you go back to that one, of course, that was the one that got D's and F's and bad grades. Started with James Carpenter and John Moffitt, but that was a draft that also produced four key players, you know, Byron Maxwell, Richard Sherman, K.J. Wright, and also Malcolm Smith. But as I think it's going to probably be this year for after the top two picks, you know, it's just going to take a little bit of time and opportunity, whether it's going to be injuries that open up the door like it did for Richard Sherman. But, you know, that's where I kind of gauge where, you know, the immediate impact won't be automatic. But again, you know that the top two picks are going to be very much involved.
Yeah, John, I voted the same as you did and said assistant coaching changes. By the way, 47% agreed, by far the plurality here in this. But if that's the case, why do you think it's taken so long for those moves to get made? I mean, why did Pete wait until this year?
Because he was trying to at least continue the core group and see how far he could take it, which, of course, was probably the right thing to do. I mean, because you figure that you have seven Pro Bowlers, you add an eighth in Sheldon Richardson on defense, and you hope that does well. You know you have a quarterback, a tight end, a wide receiver that are Pro Bowl caliber. I mean, you want to try to run it as long as you can. I mean, you know, it's like breaking things up usually get worse before it makes it better, and why break it up earlier? I mean, Pete Carroll's not Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick does it his way, but Pete Carroll wanted to see how much, as John Snyder did, you can get out of this group.
Doug Baldwin, number 99 out of the top 100 players, the NFL Network coming out with their top 100 list. Doug Baldwin, number 99, does that feel right?
Maybe a little lower than it should be, but, maybe by 10 or so. I mean, clearly, he's in the top group of wide receivers. He's a Pro Bowl candidate every year, Pro Bowl alternate every year. So, as long as he's in the top 100, I think it's fair, but probably a little bit lower than it should be.
Hey, what's the deal with this timing error? So all of a sudden this comes out yesterday that Shaquem Griffin's famous 40 time of a 4.35, there's some question about whether it's legit.
Yeah, I don't know. It seemed like that kind of. I heard that on draft day in the fifth round when things were going on, and I know we talked about it a little bit, but it just seems so weird because I mean, why would one guy have a missed time at the combine, and particularly with all the watches that are there, particularly that they do everything electronically to make sure that everything's right. I mean, it seems like it was one.
Well,
let me
play the conspiracy theory for you. It's actually that the TV copy that the NFL Network, right, that the NFL program. Programming delayed it just enough by a split second that the human eye couldn't see. But if you go back and look at it frame by frame, that the NFL was trying to do Shaquem a solid. That's what the conspiracy theorists think.
Right.
This guy wasn't invited to the combine. Obviously, he's an amazing story, everything he's overcome. So, let's really do him a solid. Start the clock a tenth of a second later, and he can run a 4.38 and become this unbelievable story and everything else. That's what the conspiracy theorists in this would want you to believe.
Yeah, but of course, that's the reality is you have every team vitally looking at every idea as far as what's there for the time. I mean, the time is so important in making the judgment. It's like to do something like that may be nice. Maybe it did come back to haunt him, but I just think it's just kind of crazy that, conspiracy theory on a watch time, that's bizarre.
Hey, what's going on? So Tom Brady's pleading the fifth when he asked if he feels appreciated by the Patriots.
I think
that's making a pretty strong statement because, no one's trying to incriminate him.
No, but I think you could see that he's bitter about some things. I mean, I think so much of this goes back that Bill Belichick kicked out his trainer and banned him from being in the facility where Tom wants him to be. I think you can see the relationship. There's a strain there between him and Bill Belichick. And I think now he's also starting to wonder about his contract. I think now that he's been underpaid and allowed himself to be underpaid for so many years, I don't think he appreciates that right now. So it's not a happy Tom.
How about a happy Clayton when we hit you with a wild card?
Time now for the wild card.
Wild card. Mr. Professor Clayton.
Yes.
If I gave you the number one overall pick in the 2018 breakfast cereal draft, which cereal would you select?
I probably would pass because I'm not a cereal guy, because I'd rather have, I think, oatmeal or something different than a cereal. But I don't know. I mean, maybe Captain Crunch. I like Captain Crunch probably the best of
I got to say that I think Mel Kiper would criticize you. Not a great value pick at number one.
No, but remember, I'd be trading it.
Because you'd be trading away the pick.
Yeah, I'd be trading away the pick.
But it sounds like you'd be trading it away to play in another league.
But of course,
if cereal is the NFL, oatmeal belongs in
I would go to the CFL.
Oatmeal's not even the CFL.
But Mel Kiper eats pumpkin pie for breakfast every morning.
Pumpkin pie?
Yeah, one slice pumpkin pie every day.
Really?
What works well with his hair.
But remember, but also, too, John doesn't eat breakfast. He doesn't eat lunch.
Right.
He just eats the one meal a day.
But why not cereal for dinner? Cereal works anytime.
Cereal.
Okay. You don't like any kind of cereal?
Not really. I don't detest it. I mean, it's not like
Lucky Charms, Raisin Bran.
You don't like
Cheerios.
A good frosted mini wheat?
No.
Huh.
Never
no.
did.
Shocking.
No, me neither.
John, have a great day.
Okay.
All right, there you go. John Clayton with us every day at 7:15.
I mean, haven't you found in life there's really just two camps? You're either a cereal guy and all in.
I love cereal, but I never eat it anymore, but I do love cereal.
Were you a cereal guy when you woke up at 1:30 in the afternoon at Pomona because you didn't have a class before 1 your entire last 3 years of school?
No, I was probably a lunch guy at that point. It's already lunchtime. I go get myself a sandwich.
Well, cereal guys eat cereal, breakfast, lunch,
have it
snack,
sometimes.
Dinner.
That was always what you had in the dining hall when you didn't like. Like, if dinner wasn't good, I always have to go with cereal. See if we can put down a little Raisin Bran tonight, because what they have for dinner, just not cutting it.
Yep.
Fish stick night. Uh-oh. Better go get them cereal.
You like the frosted wheat?
Frosted Mini Wheats?
Ugh.
Oh, you don't like those?
No.
Oh, those might be my favorite.
Really?
Oh, I like Frosted Mini Wheats. Yeah, that and the Raisin Bran Crunch, man.
All right.
Good to go. All right, let's do this. Coming up next, the Mariners have overplayed expectations so far, but the one thing they need to do to keep it going is, it's next. I'm Brock and Salk.
There it is, Distilling Company's BSB Lounge at the ballpark. When you purchase our award-winning spirits, remember to choke up on it for better control. Then send it down like a trip back to the minors. You can't spell baseball without BSB. There it is, Distilling Company, proud sponsor of your Seattle Mariners.
All right, number one cereal brand in terms of share is Honey Nut Cheerios.
Yep.
Followed by Frosted Flakes, Honey Bunches of Oats. Kind of a dark horse there at number three. Cinnamon Toast Crunch, Cheerios rounds out the top five. Then you go Frosted Mini Wheat 6, Fruit Loop 7, Lucky Charms, Raisin Bran, Special K rounds out the top 10. So in case you're wondering,
thank you.
As I was, and it's a pretty huge difference. So Honey Nut Cheerios does $500 million in sales a year.
Uh-huh.
By the time you get down to 10, Special K is only at 158.
Yeah.
So huge number for the Cheerios.
Hey, by the way, kudos to you in that first segment for using plurality, holistic, and integrated.
Oh, thank you.
That's really well done.
I've been reading a lot of business books. What can
you
I tell you?
You were reading last night, weren't you?
Yeah. You know me. Yes. Reading some of those business books, and the next thing you know, it all pops out in my language.
That's great.
So the Mariners come back home here, and I'm pretty excited, not going to lie. I mean, the way they played on that road trip was phenomenal. Haniger and Diaz and kind of the way this lineup is hitting the baseball.
Healy,
too. Sure, absolutely. The whole lineup is hitting. I mean, 1 through 9, they have one of the better lineups in Major League Baseball. I feel pretty secure in saying that. The bullpen, when Diaz is locking it down at the end, all of a sudden with Nicasio playing well, is I think as a whole, average. I don't think I can call their bullpen too much more than average, but maybe just slightly above average. I think you get some problems getting to the eighth and ninth inning, but okay, fine.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is just going to be your starting pitching. And as you mentioned, Brock, they're not, the number of quality starts has been low. Each starter's ERA has been high, although to be fair, most of them have been affected by one awful start that's really changed the way that ERA will look at this point in the season.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no doubt that that's where your eyes are going to turn, is can the pitching staff compete long enough to keep them in some of these big games?
Yeah, who leads your team in quality starts?
Leak?
No, that'd be Marco. Marco's got 3. Oh. Leak and Felix have 2. That's a combined 7. Yeah, Garrett Cole has 6. I believe he's 6-for-6 in the quality starts there for the Houston Astros.
It's a big difference.
Don't even worry about them. They've got 3 pitchers in the top 5 for ERA in the AL. Yeah. No problem.
No. Yeah, no.
It becomes the big question when you look at the Mariners, which is how will they compete against teams with elite pitching? That's Boston, that's New York, and that's Houston, essentially. Mm-hmm. And maybe I don't think I could put the Angels into that category. And quite frankly, I don't think I put Cleveland into that category. I'm not really sure yet about Toronto. But how do you compete with the best teams in the league when they're going to throw elite pitching at you game after game? And the problem with facing elite pitching is it tends to shut down elite hitting, and you better have some elite pitching of your own if you want to compete with it. You tried to make a comparison between the Mariners and the Yankees yesterday.
Yeah, right? The Yankees of 2017, last year going into the season, where you looked at the lineup and Aaron Judge obviously emerged and became one of the real phenoms and stars in all of baseball. And it's a pretty long lineup as well. Didi Gregorius and the catcher's an excellent player. Right? I mean, just
Sanchez.
And they had Chase Hundley last year. You just go through the list. They've got a lot of, there's a long lineup. And I remember the Mariners face. I'm like, geez, there is no breather in that lineup, which is exactly what the Indians felt facing us and other teams, the Oakland fans, and Oakland's going to face, against these Mariners. And then their rotation going into the year was a little problematic. Could CC Sabathia have another good year? Could he continue to reinvent himself? Tanaka had a torn up elbow. Is that thing going to last, or at least I don't know.
There's some similarity.
A struggling
in
elbow,
spots.
And then Severino is a flamethrower, but can he do it over the course of a season? And I think you could find CC and Felix and Severino and James Paxton, and from a stuff standpoint, is there a comparison to be made there that offense was so good and it forced the hand of Cashman and the Yankees to say, let's go add Sonny Gray. Let's add another arm because we're going to be able to score enough.
And Tommy Connolly and the other guys that they brought in. Here's the difference because I think your comparison on its surface makes some sense. There is one gigantic difference. The Yankees had the weapons to go get those guys. The Yankees had a farm system that is continuing to bring up talent after talent after talent every year, not to mention a payroll that is as flexible as anybody wants it to be because they can always spend more money. Even if you take out the payroll part of it, the Mariners just don't have the prospects to go get even a reliever and a frontline starter if that's what you want to add this season. And by the way, I think you do. I mean, if you are really trying to make a run at this, and I don't know that they should, but if you are, you can't tell me that you have the starting pitching staff to compete with Houston, Los Angeles, Boston, New York, and Toronto, right?
No.
I mean, nobody's looking at the Mariners starting rotation and say it competes with those 5 teams.
Nope.
So if you want to do that, you need to go out and acquire another frontline starter. If you want to acquire a frontline starter, you are trading either a healthy
Kyle Lewis,
or you're trading Evan White, your first-round pick from last year.
Yep.
I don't, There's no real other way to acquire a frontline starter. They don't have enough. They don't have enough talent in their organization to go acquire somebody the equivalent of what the Yankees got last year with Sonny Gray.
Okay, so do you have it from within?
And are you willing to do that?
This lineup are going to answer that question. Not me. They're going to do it.
All right. So if they're right there in June. You want to do it a month early?
Or
do you
want to wait this 500 all? And they're bashing and they're making things happen. Yep. And by the way, the new word is ambush.
Yes.
They continue to ambush starting pitching.
If they continue to ambush starting pitching, Brock, if Mitch Haniger continues to do this.
First pitch to him, a swung on and clubbed high and deep to left field. Is this number four? Back it goes. Gone. Four games in a row for Mitch Haniger.
If that continues to happen and they continue to roll, do you want to continue to raid your farm system in order to bring back starting pitching this year?
I mean, it's hard to even say a farm system. I mean, to raid a farm system, you don't have a system. You're one of the worst in baseball. So are you going to then just, I guess, scorched earth and have absolutely nothing in your farm system whatsoever? I think the team will dictate that, Mike. Yeah, I think they will. I think of Paxton. I've got to see somebody in this starting rotation. Maybe it continues to be Marco, who continues to be a really pleasant surprise.
Sure.
And Paxton actually gets going, which he typically has done in May and June, and gets going. And Felix continues to give you six innings and gives you some quality. And that if those guys do their job, right, and truly you're 10 games over 500, not at 500, not a couple games back in the wild card, but really differentiating yourself from the rest of these losers out there in the American
League. It's so hard, though. I mean, when the Yankees made those moves last year, they did so from a position of great strength with their farm system.
Correct.
You want to trade a couple of prospects for Sonny Gray and Tommy Conley? Fine. You've got more than enough guys in your farm system. They're bringing up the best prospect in baseball, what, a couple of weeks ago? I mean, like, they just keep coming with because they've been building that farm system for years and years and years.
Yep.
If you don't have that, can you afford to go out and spend one of the few resources you have to go bring back a frontline pitcher, especially one who might leave in a year?
Please hope we're having this
discussion.
Well,
I will tell you this. Jerry won't do that.
Yeah.
I believe in my heart of hearts Jerry will not let that happen. He will not trade either Evan White or Kyle Lewis and without either getting something back in return to replace them or getting a pitcher that he thinks will be here for the long term, not just for a year and a half.
Right.
I don't buy for a moment that Jerry DePoto will do. It's just not in his nature or his makeup.
Yeah,
he's done nothing in his time here that would make you think that
would happen.
He
actually has already done that. He did that with Phelps. He did it with Smiley. He did that with some of these pitchers that unfortunately, you know, blew out elbows and it just didn't work out. But having said all that.
Not really. He didn't trade prospects for Smiley. He traded Brad Miller and some guys that were on his team, right? And when it came to who else did you just say? Phelps? I mean, he traded some young players for that, but they had a year and a half, and they were not the best players in his farm system.
Let's hope we're having this discussion. Let's hope we continue to have this discussion through May and June, because it means they're doing what they're doing right now. It means Eddie Diaz is the best closer in baseball. It means that Mitch Haniger is one of the five best players, and I think a viable candidate for American League Player of the Year. Let's hope we're having this discussion. And by the way, back to your cereal. You know, it used to be just Nelson Cruz that had that crack of the bat, right, in these highlights where his bat just sounded different. But now you had Healy, you had Haniger. Like, there's a snap, crackle, pop throughout that line. Zanino, there's all of those guys.
D. Gordon out here hitting four hits in a game?
Yes.
That's crazy.
Are you going to start comparing Segura and D. Gordon to the Keebler Elves? Like, what's next here? You got the Keebler Elves running around. You got the snap, crackle, pop.
I was just giving you snap, crackle, pop.
All right. I wasn't sure where this thing went.
Going this
all right. I was just trying to make sure I understood. Who had a better April, by the way? Was it Haniger or was it Diaz? You want the numbers? Would that help? Haniger 309 with a 394 on base percentage.
It's really a holistic.
An OPS of 1085, 10 home runs and 27 driven in. Diaz threw 14.1 innings, allowed him two hits, one run, 27 strikeouts and 7 walks, and was 11 for 11.
Yeah, I'm going to say Diaz. I got to just say Diaz. And that's more of just the eye test. There were just nights where the opponent was like, I'm tapping out. Like, I'm not even that good. Can't hit that. So it was just, I think, the overwhelming nature of him. And outside of the first game of the season where he hit two guys and he had one outing where he just could not quite find his stuff, still got out of it. There just has not been a bump. You know, Mitch had a couple games or a little stretch there, as every hitter's going to do, right, against Houston or what have you, where it just slowed down a little bit. Eddie never slowed down. Sugar just never slowed down this entire month. And on pace for 60 saves, I have to pick between those two children. Yeah, I say Eddie Diaz.
Lydia, who are you taking?
Yeah, I'd probably go Eddie simply because, yeah, he's got four more saves than the next best closer in the AL, which would be Craig Kimbrell, which is hard to do. So.
It's funny. You guys are right because obviously the numbers and what we've seen, it's just so hard for me to look at it and say a guy who threw 14 total innings in the month was correct. Better. Like, I know closers are a big deal. I
even though when the majority of those were just highly
I know. They were highly huge, leveraged spots. High leverage spots. Yeah. 14 innings. Yep. The other guy played nearly every inning of the. I mean, like, how many innings did Felix throw in April? 30 something? 40 something? I mean, like, the difference is so spectacular. It's hard for me to do it, but I understand where you're coming from. All right. Thanks. Coming up next, let's get back to the football. Coors Light's Blue 42. There is one trait that sets the new Seahawks running back apart from the other running backs they have already on the roster. What is it? Brock will tell you next on Brock and Saul.
Hey, Brock Hewitt here for Toyota Puyallup. You know, when you're shopping for a new vehicle, you want the best value and to be treated fairly. You want confidence that the dealership will be there long after the sale. Well, Toyota Puyallup is Washington's most awarded Toyota dealer for customer satisfaction, and they've been doing it for almost 50 years. Toyota Puyallup has more than 700 new Toyotas for you to choose from and one of the largest selections of Toyota trucks in the Northwest. Plus, they all come with 2 years of complimentary maintenance. So go see Carrie and her team at Toyota Puyallup, putting you first since 1970.
Hey, this is Bob Stelton from the Bob Gross and Tom Show. I want to thank you for listening to the Brock and Salk Show. And you know what would be fantastic is if you checked out the Bob Gross and Tom Show every day from noon to 3. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
All right, time for the Coors Light's Blue 42. This is where we give you three good football questions with Brock every day. Hope you're having a good morning. You're having a nice drive to work in our early version of spring we're getting this year. Brock, let's start here. Question number one. The one thing that sets Rashad Penny apart from the other running backs already on this roster, why him?
Yeah, I think it is the durability factor, Mike. That's the one trait that he has when you look at the other. Now, it's going to be nice. Pro size, we talked about this yesterday. It was actually your point that all three of these running backs, Chris Carson, TJ Prosise, and I think Rashad Penny can all be three down guys. Now, Rashad's got to get a lot better in pass protection. And frankly, so does TJ Prosise. That's not a strength of his. I think Chris Carson, it is. But all three of those guys, very similar shape, very similar physical attributes. But the one thing that I think sets Rashad, when you look at those three and their careers apart, was his durability. Unfortunately, Prosise was nicked up in college, and when you're nicked up in college, it's very hard to stay healthy and durable in the NFL. And as we know from Chris Carson, going from a commitment to Georgia, to Butler Junior College, to Oklahoma State, to in and out, and even last season, unfortunately, not being able to keep it going throughout the course of the entire season, that has not been the case for Rashad Penny. He's been unbelievably stable and durable, 54 games played in college. I think that was an attribute that was very, very appealing.
All right, question number two. I heard you mention earlier you thought Will Dissly could step in right from day one as the number two tight end. Of course, a rookie fourth-round pick out of Washington. Why? What sets him apart?
Yeah, leverage. Yeah, Billy Bozeman understands leverage. And when you play defense, I mean, this is some of the old Tom Cable way back when it was a good thing. I'm going to take this defensive lineman, I'm going to make him an offensive player, but not at the pro level. He got to do that collegiately. And I think that's a huge asset for him, playing on the defensive side of the ball for a couple years, understanding what defense wants to do, understanding defensive scheme, Mike, understanding what leverage and pad level is on that side, and then making the switch offensively and just being an absolute animal. Luke Wilson was a guy you had to train to get his butt down and block. Right, Nick Vannett is a guy you've had to train to get his butt down and block. That's so many of these tight ends that have come in here. Jimmy Graham never wanted to get his butt down and block. This guy wants to get his butt down, he wants to get his hands on you, and he wants to drive you out to Bozeman. That will be a huge advantage for this offense.
Question number three. Talked a lot about how the Seahawks stuck to their identity with this draft, drafting guys that fit what they said they want to do. Who else did that? What other teams in the league were really good about keeping to their identity?
Yeah, there's two that jump out to me in very different ways as far as the size of the class. But Philadelphia had only five picks. And they used some, obviously, Michael Bennett. They made moves. They only had five picks. Four of those were on the line of scrimmage. Right? That they won, I think, a world championship last year because of their ability to run the football, their ability to dominate the line of scrimmage, their D-line, their O-line. They take five, but they take a tight end, a D-end, and two tackles. Let's throw in one corner just for fun. But they stuck to that line of scrimmage. And by the way, so did the Rams. So did the Rams, who spent a lot of their capital, their early draft capital, on a lot of different players and pros, but they had 10 picks overall. They traded down, and I think 9 of those 10 guys are all at the line of scrimmage or linebackers. Like, they just, hey, man, this game's going to be won in the trenches. If there's a copycat nature to what Philadelphia did last year, it's, hey, and Seattle did for their run, is you can still win this game dominating the line of scrimmage. And the L.A. Rams, albeit with 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, and a bunch of 7ths, they added a whole lot of big bodies, O-line, D-line, linebackers, to continue to replenish that line of scrimmage game.
All right, there you go. That's today's Coors Light's Blue 42. A lot of people are looking for me to get my butt down and start blocking.
Yeah, wow. You got to get your butt down.
Apparently a thing. You said it like 7 times
did
in
I?
A row. Yeah.
Well, you know, when you
it's important.
When a coach repeats himself, I know that it's a priority. And for Will Dissly, here's the cool thing, Salk. For like 3 or 4 years, you asked me, okay, 3rd and 1. Why are you running?
Yeah.
4th and 1.
So what are you doing this year?
Where are you running? You may have a challenge to pick either the Dixon Brown side or whoever ends up being the right tackle, Fant, Fetty, and Will Dissly. Or you may just go Ed Dixon in a wing alignment with Dissly, with Dwayne Brown at left tackle, and say, go ahead. And if you want to bring outside people and you want a linebacker dog or you want to bring a safety down, that's okay. But we're going to maul the line of scrimmage.
It's funny, from what I've seen from Rashad Penny, those are the ones he likes to cut back right away, too. You're looking like you're going to go to the left side off the tight end. And no, I'm just going to cut it back and go right off the bat.
Yeah, and it is pretty cool. I mean, Dissly does remind me. I was thinking about this a little bit. And in my years, Mike, when I played, the tight end group was phenomenal. You know, it started with Aaron Pierce, with Damon, and even before Damon is a national champion team. And then Mark Bruner is there. And if you've ever met Mark Bruner, he's got these hands that, and Ernie Conwell, for that matter, from the Kent Covington area growing up, changing out spark plugs. And Mark had these big Aberdeen meat hooks. Bruner had these Kent meat hooks. Cam Cleland had these Cedro Woolley meat hooks. Like, these guys, so not just butt down and leverage and block, but meat hooks, too. Those things are wonderful attributes for tight ends.
I got to see Will Dissly's hands. I think that's now something I'm going to have to. That'll be one of the things that's on my mind when we get to mini camp or training camp or whatever, just taking a good look at Will Dissly's hands.
Also, result of my non-epic poll, because all of my polls are not epic.
Non-epic.
Which Will Dissly nickname is more legendary? I asked 41% going with Uncle Will.
Okay.
Billy Bozeman, 37%. Both is getting a 22%. Sure.
You got to choose.
At the end of the day, you got to pick one.
You're not forcing people to choose.
I like Billy Bozeman.
Go with Uncle Will.
I'm going to raise my hand for Billy Bozeman.
I voted in your poll, Lydia, and I voted for Uncle Will.
Uncle Will like Will Ferrell, feels comedy act. I don't want that. Yeah, I want.
It's just too generic.
I want a spittoon. I want meat hooks. I want cowboy boots. I want Billy Bozeman.
They already called Cliff Averill Uncle Cliff.
Yeah,
Uncle this, Uncle that.
Everybody's avuncular on the Seahawks. They're a very avuncular team.
No.
Right. Uncle Sam. I don't need any of it.
Let's see if we can get back to this thing here. We talked about Lydia's non-epic poll. We had an earlier poll as well asking which portion of the offseason has you excited the most. We'll dig in. We'll take some calls. We'll do it all next. I'm Brock and Salk.